I'll call this meeting of the Property Tax Division to order pursuant to Rule 10.01. The first order of business is that we're going to have a roll call to determine who is present. But today we're going to do it a little different. We'll pause after you say present for you to introduce yourself. Please state the district that you represent, the areas that are in it, and then just add one thing you may want us members to know about either the area, the city, or the neighborhood that you represent. So welcome to the Property Tax Committee, and the clerk will now take the roll.
Cheryl Joachim.
Hello, I am Representative Cheryl Joachim, and I represent 46B, which is Hopkins and St. Louis Park. And one thing I'd like folks to know about our area, I'll talk about the city I live in, Hopkins. We have a wonderful Main Street with some great small businesses. One of my favorites is our local bookstore, who's owned by one of our Hopkins grads. It's called Cream and Amber. So if you're ever in Hopkins, check it out. But St. Louis Park has a great small business district as well.
Vice Chair Greenman is excused. Representative Hertas.
Welcome everybody and members. Chair Joachim, I grew up in that Hopkins area. I remember the Raspberry Day Parade Festival very well. I represent 33A, which is out in Western Hennepin County. The communities are St. Bonifacius, Minnetrista, Wayzata, Independence, Orono, Long Lake, Maple Plain, Greenfield, Cork, and Medina, I think, and 11 total. This is the rural part of Hennepin, represents a large area of it. Jokingly, this is where the red rocks and cows live. I'm done.
Wonderful. Representative Anderson.
Hello, hi. My name is Paul Anderson, represent 12B, which is kind of the area, if you're along the freeway 94 between St. Cloud and Alexandria. Real good agricultural area, western part of Stearns County, parts of Polk County and Douglas County. And my predecessor used to always say there's more cows than people in our district up there along the area. Good dairy country, Stearns County, a real big, powerful ag producing county in the state. So ag is important to me and also to the district here that I represent, and good to be on the committee. Some issues affecting, I think, assessments of ag properties I'd like to get into during the course of our session. So looking forward to being on the committee and adding my input to whatever we come up with. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Becker Finn is excused. We'll go to Representative Fisher.
Hi, Peter Fisher, I'm present. The district I represent is 43A, and those are the communities of Willerney, Birchwood, and Montemita in Washington County. And then in Ramsey County, I have parts of Wiper Lake and Maplewood. Maplewood is the home to 3M. That's one of our claims to fame here in Maplewood. And then also part of my district includes the Lake of White Bear Lake, which is the largest East Metro lake, and we have a lot of trails in the area. So I always encourage people to take the trails and walk around the lakes.
Thank you. We'll go to Representative Gomez.
Good afternoon. My name is Aisha Gomez. I represent District 62B, which is in South Minneapolis. I'm in my second term, and this is I took a position on the tax on the property tax committee for the 2020 session. After when Representative Loeffler, Diane Loeffler passed away. I represent the area where George Floyd was murdered by the Minneapolis Police Department this summer, and an area that was really heavily impacted by the civil unrest that followed. And, you know, Representative Hassan's also on this committee, so this is the sort of main commercial corridor and kind of lifeblood of our community is East Lake Street. And you know, when you go there today, it's still a lot of structures are gone. A lot of businesses that we're used to seeing are gone. There's, you know, a lot of kind of activity happening. Hopefully we're kind of moving in a better direction, but there were definitely have been a lot of property tax issues that have impacted those businesses and sort of, you know, some of the kind of attempts to rebuild. And so that was just sort of a way that this the work of this committee intersected with my district. Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I'm thrilled to be here and happy to dig into this work with you all.
Thank you. Next up, Representative Green.
Well, thank you. Thank you to members of the committee, Madam Chair. I am Steve Green. My district is 2B, and rather than try to give you the counties, which I do enough times, basically, if you're familiar with at all with Northwest Minnesota, my district goes from right around Park Rapids, a little over halfway to Fargo, and then it moves north from there up to Highway 2. So it's a big district. We have agriculture as well as resorts. We have logging and industry. So we have a pretty diverse economy up here. Property tax is a huge issue for us. We're very rural. Representative Anderson is an urban compared to us. So we have a lot of issues with land being sold off to non-tax-paying entities, and it's driving up other property taxes. And it's also squeezing us in on how many more people can move here. Limits a lot of opportunity for young people to own their own land. But anyway, I look forward to serving on this committee. I'm in my fifth term, and this is my first time on the Property Tax Committee.
Thank you. Next, Representative Hassan.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Houghton Hassan. I represent District 62A, South Minneapolis, is the other side of Aisha's district. This is my second term and first time serving in property tax. I have a lot of learning to do, so I'm relying on all of you to learn from you. One fun fact about my district is it's the most diverse district in the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to Chair Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Paul Marquardt, this is my 11th term. I'm present. I represent all or parts of Norman County, Clay County, and Becker County, and the huge We Fest Country Festival music is held just south of Detroit Lakes every year, that big event. So that might be the one major event people know the district most by. So great to be on the committee. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next up, Representative Mortensen.
Good morning. Present, first and foremost, I'm out of District 55A, Shakopee, Jackson Township, Louisville Township. And of course, we are the land of entertainment with Valley Fair and Canterbury Downs and Mystic Lake Casino.
Thank you. Next up, Representative Pulaski. Representative Pulaski, you're muted.
I don't think so. No, I wasn't, but I'm just a retired social studies teacher from Winona.
Thank you. And next up, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Representative Paul Torkelson, District 16B, South Central Minnesota, all of Brown County, most of Redwood, and a bit of Renville County. I have 21 communities in my district, along with a whole bunch of townships. New Ulm, being the largest city in my district, is home to Shell's Brewery, the second oldest family-owned brewery in the country, proud makers of Shell's and Grain Belt products.
Thank you. That completes the role, Chair Joachim, and a quorum is present.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. So I'm going to have staff identify themselves, and if you could please state what your area of expertise is, that would be great. And we're going to start with Ms. Schill.
Good afternoon, Chair Joachim and members. My name is Kathy Schill. I'm a fiscal analyst with the nonpartisan House Fiscal Analysis Department. I've been with the House for, 20 plus years. I started in the year 2000, excuse me. And I've been with the Property Tax Division since 2006. And I'm the numbers gal. Ask me questions on spending and I'll do what I can to help you out.
Thank you. Next, Ms. Hagler.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Alex Hagler. My primary area of expertise here is sales tax, and I'm filling the shoes that Pat Dalton left when she retired over the summer. And for the purposes of this committee, I will be doing the local option sales taxes and tax increment financing and any random legal property tax issues that come up.
Thank you, Ms. Hagler. Next, we have Mr. Kleinman.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Chris Kleinman with the House Research Department. Mostly I handle business taxation and the corporate franchise tax and the state taxes for the full taxes committee. For this committee, I do handle some of the smaller local tax areas like special service districts and also special assessments.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman, and I'll eventually get that right. Mr. Williams.
Chair Yuakim and members, my name is Sean Williams. I primarily staff individual income taxes and tax modeling for the full taxes committee, but I also handle the property tax refund program, which your committee has jurisdiction over.
Thank you. And then next we have Ms. Templin.
Good afternoon. Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I've been with the Tax Committee for about 17 years, and my primary area of responsibility is state taxes, but I do back up Ms. Schill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I want to just thank nonpartisan staff for all your work and all the resources that you bring to our committee. Next, we'll go to nonpartisan staff. Mr. Rubius.
Hi, Stephen Rubis from House GOP Research. I'm on Property Taxes and Tax Committee.
And is Ms. Martine with us? I wasn't sure if she'd be. Is Ms. Martine with us today or? All right, we'll go to Mr. Haydorn.
Hello, Sean Haydorn. I'm the DFL researcher for taxes and property taxes, as well as rules and legislative reform.
And Mr. Jessen.
Hi, I'm Nathan Jessen, and I'm committee administrator for the property tax division.
And our CLA, Mr. Erickson. Or Peterson. I was mixing up your first and last name. Sorry about that, Mr. Peterson.
Okay, it's a strong Scandinavian name. Eric Peterson, committee legislative assistant. So.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson, and thanks, everyone. I'm excited to have you all on committee and for us to learn from each other. I want to note that all the committee documents for today, including our committee procedures, have been sent out to members via email, and they're also located on the committee page for the public and the House website. And members, just look over the committee procedures and let me know if you have any questions. I'm not going to go over them one by one right now, but I do want to point out that we are not going to have a 24-hour rule for amendments, but please keep in mind staff time. They are really swamped, and just be cognizant of that when drafting amendments, especially during this session. And I want to request that members, if possible, have their cameras on when they're speaking or during votes. It's just nice for folks to be able to see your faces, just like when we're at the committee table. So I think we'll kick it off. We have a lot to go over today. So the first item on the agenda is to have staff go over the timelines and requirements for local governments that received coronavirus relief funds. Ms. Schill and Mr. Swanson, I'm going to hand it over to you. So I don't, you know, however you want to organize it, and just please introduce yourself the first time you speak and start whenever you're ready.
Madam Chair, I think we missed an introduction of Mr. Swanson. Maybe we'll pick that up as we proceed.
I'm sorry about that. I clearly cannot multitask. So yes, does Mr. Swanson just want to introduce himself right now, and then we will go to the overview?
Sure. Madam Chair and members, Jared Swanson with House Research. I staff the kind of broad area of property taxes as well as state aids to local governments. Along with that, I do modeling of property tax proposals and state aid proposals, including local government aid, county program aid, and town aids.
And I'm so sorry about that, because Mr. Swanson and Ms. Schill are the ones that we're going to hear from the most. So let's go ahead and move on to the overview.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. As we're waiting for the presentation to be available, I'm going to make a very, very brief reference. Members, you have posted to the website and distributed to you a tax aids and credits House fiscal spreadsheet. This is a three-page document on legal paper, so I do not recommend that you open it up on your phone. You might get a headache. But this is the base level document current as of end of special session 7, which is after the November forecast. And on this particular spreadsheet, we'll review that in more detail next time we meet. But I wanted to point out that there are three budget activities associated with COVID-19 appropriations. And the ones contained in this presentation that we're about to give are located on lines 109 through 112. That's the Federal Coronavirus Relief Fund. To begin the presentation, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kathy Schill, fiscal analyst of the Nonpartisan Fiscal Analysis Department. My colleague, Jared Swanson, legislative analyst of the Nonpartisan House Research Department, and I will provide an update on CARES Act funding for local governments, both the distributions and uses. Next slide, please. To provide a quick recap on the Federal Coronavirus Relief Fund, or I'll talk to you, refer to it as CRF. On March 27th, 2020, the Federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, the CARES Act, became law with congressional appropriations of $2.2 trillion. Its contents included stimulus checks for individuals, paycheck protection program loans for businesses, and $150 billion for states by establishing the Coronavirus Relief Fund. Aid paid to states from the CRF was based on population, with units of local government having population of 500,000 or more, eligible for a direct payment from the U.S. Treasury. This table shows Minnesota's CRF distribution of $2.187 billion. Subtracted from this total are amounts of direct payments going to Hennepin and Ramsey counties that total $317 million, and the remaining balance of $1.87 billion is the state's direct allocation. The CARES Act, administered by the U.S. Treasury, specifically limits the use of CRF monies only for expenses that are necessary expenditures incurred due to the COVID-19 public health emergency, were not accounted for in the budget most currently approved as of March 27, 2020 for state or local government entities, and were incurred during the period that begins on March 1st, 2020 and ending on December 30th, 2020. In addition, U.S. Treasury guidance explicitly explains that the CRF funds cannot be used to replace lost revenues or pay for costs that will be reimbursed by another federal program. I'll now turn it to Mr. Swanson for the next few slides.
Madam Chair and members, I'm going to just cover a little bit about what the legislature's role was in distributing these CARES Act dollars, and then talk a little bit about how the money was actually distributed to the local governments. So the legislature's role in all of this started back in May when both the Senate and the House began to hear bills on how to distribute the CARES Act funds to local governments. Included in some of these discussions were the overall size of the allocation, formulas for how the funds should be distributed, and other items like grants for individuals and businesses.
In the end, no agreement was reached during the regular session or during the first special session at the beginning of June. At the end of June, the Department of Revenue submitted a request to the Legislative Advisory Committee, and the committee approved the request for the distribution of approximately $841 million of CARES Act funding through a distribution formula that the legislature had developed. Of that amount, about 55% was to be allocated to counties, and the remaining 45% was reserved for cities and towns. Counties also received additional funding for cities and towns that were not eligible for direct distributions, and I'll talk a little bit more about that on the next slide. But not included in this plan were some of the other items that the legislature had discussed, like set-asides for economic support or a separate needs-based funding formula for a portion of the allocation. So ultimately what happened is that there was a formula created to distribute the $841 million to local governments on a per capita basis. So the 85 counties, remember this excludes Hennepin and Ramsey County that Kathy mentioned, they got direct distributions from the federal government. So the remaining 85 counties were eligible for distributions equal to about $121 per capita. Cities were eligible for distributions equal to just over $75 per capita. And towns were eligible for distributions equal to $25 per capita. Any township that had a population of more than 5,000, and there are 8 of these townships in the state, they were eligible for the same per capita distribution as cities. And finally, cities and townships that had a population of less than 200 had their distributions sent directly to the county. And the idea behind this is that it would be easier for counties to ensure that the funds were being spent in accordance with the federal guidelines, rather than requiring some of these smaller cities or towns to figure out that guidance on their own. And Madam Chair, I'll pass it back to Ms. Schill.
Okay, slide number 7 talks about timelines for local governments. Now, there are 2 sets of timelines that we had to work with. First was certification from the Department of Revenue to receive a distribution. And I believe that there were 7 dates for certification, all finalized by September 15th. And then the other was spending deadlines. Cities and towns had until November 15th to spend their funds. After that date, unexpended funds were transferred to home counties, except for Hennepin and Ramsey, where the funds were transferred to hospitals in those counties. And for counties, they had a spending deadline of December 1st, 2020. After that date, unexpended funds were returned to the state by December 10th for cancellation to the CRF, allowing for other authorized COVID-19 uses. Next slide. Certification by the Department of Revenue required the promise to follow federal guidelines for allowable uses, monthly reporting to Minnesota Management and Budget, MMB, using standardized compliance forms for both federal and state requirements, record keeping, audit provisions, and other things. Each local government also confirmed their responsibility to reimburse the state for any costs disallowed by the federal government. This is important because you'll see in some of the spending tables that will come that there are more expenditures than amounts allotted just in case for disallowance. To facilitate the online reporting, MMB conducted 8 outreach meetings to discuss U.S. Treasury guidance and other reporting requirements. Next slide, please. So this is the status report, total distributions as of September 15th, 2020. The rollout of CRF distributions went well. By the end of July, almost all counties had certified and received their distributions. And by the end of August, more than 1,000 cities had certified for their distributions. The certification process closed on September 15th. On October 21st, MMB issued a final report on all CRF local government distributions. Of the $841 million made available to local governments, A total of $467.3 million was distributed to 85 counties, and $370.5 million was distributed to 1,530 cities and towns. The total, $837.7 million, was 99.6% of the amount originally allocated. Next slide, please. Slide 10, this is a summary of unexpended funds returned by local governments by type of local government. Cities and towns with the spending deadline of November 15th transferred a total of $9.4 million, or about 2% of their distributions, to counties. And that's shown to you on this slide on that very first line. So you'll see negative in that second column. The money's moving to the counties. For cities and towns in Hennepin and Ramsey, a total of $234,000 was transferred to local hospitals. And for counties with a deadline of December 1st, a total of $932,000 was returned to the state. That figure is 0.2% of all of the funds allocated. Next slide, please. Now, also in your packet, you have a single page summary of this information. Way too much for this particular slide, but let me just give you some outline parameters, and then the next slide will help. This table summarizes spending by category and by type of local government. Each local government was required to identify their spending among 18 categories listed for their monthly report submitted to MMB. As of December 15th, 1,413, or 87% of local governments, had submitted an accepted final report on spending, and that's the information presented in this table. About 200 reports were still outstanding or not yet finalized. The next chart will make this information easier to read. And here we are. These are the results for the top seven categories of expenditures for all local governments, reflecting 93% of expenditures. The top three CRF uses were $311 million in spending on payroll costs for public health and safety employees, $182 million for small business assistance, and $64 million for budgeted personnel and services diverted for substantially different uses. Spending in the four other categories listed ranged between $25 million and $58 million. And finally, the last slide will give you some resource references for further information, especially if you're looking for individual local government distributions and spending reports. That would be available at MMB COVID-19 Accountability Office, but we've also provided that document in particular posted to the website and in your packet. And with that, Chair Joachim concludes this presentation.
Thank you so much, Michelle and Mr. Swanson. I, of course, forgot to tell folks how we'll be able to get recognized for questions. So on Zoom, you can either use the raise hand features and some of the older ones like I have. It is in participants. Otherwise, I think if you have the updated version, it might be in reaction, or depending on the device you're using. So members, what we'll do right now is see if folks have any specific questions for Ms. Schiller or Mr. Swanson. Give it a second here. Oh, I see Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a quick question, and I Googled it because it's probably a dumb question, but I couldn't find the answer. Just wondering, you said you had this incurred versus encumbered thing, like sort of parentheses back in one of the early slides. I just wonder if you could explain to me what the difference between those two things is.
Michelle or Mr. Swanson?
Madam Chair and Representative Gomez, yes, that it was a requirement for the use of funds. Expenditures had to be totally expended, not just encumbered, by December 30th. And of course, the state had its own spending deadlines. We moved that forward for cities and counties, November 15th and December 1. And so that is what was a requirement in that certification process. And so the idea was that we needed to meet federal guidelines. And at that time, December 30th was the spending deadline.
Representative Gomez, any follow-up?
Okay, sorry. So like incurred means that you finished spending the money, and encumbered means like that you sort of like committed to spending the money in the future?
Ms. Schill.
That's correct. It had to be fully executed. And in fact, if you turn to some of the guidance that the U.S. Treasury provided, they gave it the example of a school bus, or it could have been an example by MMB. In any case, if you were looking to buy, for example, a school bus for, I don't know, transporting public employees, the idea of that purchase, you had to have substantial lead time to actually get it. It wasn't a school bus, it was an ambulance, that's what it was. But anyway, the bottom line is that you couldn't begin the purchase and have it extend beyond December 30th. Everything had to be spent.
Thank you, Ms. Schill. Representative Gomez, any further?
No, that's great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Schill. I appreciate it.
Thank you, members. Any other questions before we move on? I'm not seeing any, and we'll have time for questions at the end as well. Thank you again to nonpartisan staff. Next up, we are going to have the Association of Minnesota Counties. They'll go over how counties use the funds and some of the successes and challenges that they faced. We're going to have the cities come up after that. So we're going to wait until the very end for questions for the counties and the cities. First up will be Mr. Hilgard, if you will introduce yourself and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. My name is Matt Hilgart, and I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC, as it's known, represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties throughout the entire state. I want to give you and this committee accolades for taking the time today to talk about the CARES Act or the CRF fund. I know it's not glamorous or scintillating or really was covered too much or widely by the newspapers this year, but it was a significant and historic amount of taxpayer dollars, and it served us well to be reflective on how the funds were used, and most importantly, how Minnesotans have benefited. I want to thank House Research for their fantastic overview, as is typical of this committee, of CARES Act provisions, as well as MMB and State Auditor's Office for assisting counties with the implementation of these funds. I will be limiting my testimony today to a broad overview of county spending areas, along with some of the difficulties and hardships county governments faced and worked through while spending these dollars in the community. I will leave most of the allotted time that we have as counties to others, as it's always nice to hear from local staff and electeds rather than just association professionals. And today we are honored to have guests, county commissioners or county staff from Rock County, Pine County, and Ramsey County to speak to their own individual county stories and successes. For people unfamiliar with the Association of Minnesota Counties, we are a membership-led organization that splits our work between county commissioner education, outreach, and county staff professional development, as well as policy and advocacy at a state and federal level. Our overall mission is to promote and further effective county governance on behalf of the people of Minnesota. As such, immediately following, and frankly, even before the passage of this executive order in late June, AMC got to work creating resources, hosting numerous work groups, committee meetings, Slack discussions, and Zoom meetings, along with partnering with other organizations such as the Minnesota Intercounty Association to develop toolkits, resource guides, and draft applications and forms to make sure that all 87 counties were getting correct, speedy, and uniform guidance. And I wanted to thank Micah for those efforts as well. And looking back on the short 5 months, which is very hard to believe, in between receiving the funds and spending the dollars, AMC is proud to say that counties acted swiftly and creatively while prioritizing community assistance and needs. In all of our discussions with members, we underscore transparency. So this means talking with your local, holding the discussions on fundings openly in county board settings so that the public could participate, view, provide suggestions, having community forums, which many counties did, and reaching out to newspapers to let folks know what assistance programs were available. Collaborations, you saw many counties work collaboratively with their local units of government, such as townships or cities, to consolidate their funds and work together. You also saw counties working together. I think a lot of the business assistance forms that were used in the state, I'd say about roughly a third of them, are frankly Ramsey County's form that they got up early and folks, they were kind enough to share it and give tutorials for other folks on how to use it. Creativity. Thinking, and this is, you know, this is important for government, thinking not how it can't be done, but how it could be done. And lastly, empathy. And I think that was something that we just really underscored throughout this whole process. And I know was a goal and reflective of the needs of this own chamber. When Representative Markwart was negotiating some of this in the legislature, there was a proposed mandate of 10% of assistance being required for economic or business assistance. It did not get put through, but we knew that your intent was to get these funds into the community. And I think you should be proud about what the results were. As you will hear from many of the testifiers today, many counties used a majority of their funds on external community-based outreach and assistance. And I'll give you some examples, and please don't think this is limited to these examples, but these are just broad areas that members can see where the funds were spent. The most popular area was mostly our business assistance programs. Many of these were created or collaborated with by other local governments or even chambers of commerce. We saw grants in the amount of 1,000 to even 50,000 being our top. We conducted our own internal survey data. And at the end of that survey data, I'd say in the middle, in the beginning of December, we found that 59 counties sent 9,550 grants out to businesses and nonprofits. And that does not even include the two largest counties in the state. So all total, that nearly 10,000 grants represented $167 million sent out to external partners just in business assistance or nonprofit assistance. Nonprofit assistance, that's the question. What does this mean? I would categorize this as two types of nonprofit assistance. There was the assistance that counties sent out to nonprofits who had to close or had their revenue streams impacted by pandemic closures. So think about nonprofit organizations, chambers, nonprofit associations, theaters, VFW or veterans organizations. We provided assistance to those folks who had lost some revenue, but we also partnered with service-oriented nonprofits that were called on to aid or collaborate with county governments to deliver a service. I think we encourage our folks to have the humility to say, hey, are we the best people to be delivering the service to? Perhaps we're not, and if so, let's find the person in our community or the organization that is best fitted to do this and provide them with resources. Food and housing insecurity was a huge issue that counties saw throughout this pandemic and are continuing to see. Countless number of counties partnered with local food banks, senior housing facilities, or other nonprofits to provide access to food or redirect county staff time to make or deliver meals throughout the community. Coochachin County, and I want members to know that this is not a metropolitan issue by any means. This is if the housing and food insecurity is something that all of our commissioners throughout the state were talking about as this pandemic continued on. In Coochachin County alone, at the height of some of the darkest days of the pandemic, they were providing over 160 meals a week to residents. That's county folks partnering with folks to actually create the meals and then county staff helping to deliver them to homes. So this is real. It's not just located to the metropolitan area. This is throughout our state. School assistance, we saw a lot of counties give a disproportionate amount of their funds to schools. There was state assistance to schools too. I think there were three different programs, ESSER, GEARS, perhaps even one other, I'm forgetting the acronym of. But counties also provided assistance. Lake of the Woods County gave, I think, over half their funds. Fillmore County gave 540,000 funds, really to make sure that students and teachers have the resources they need to make the school year as successful as they could. rental and mortgage relief programs, hospital assistance, both for county-run hospitals and local hospitals, extension of broadband infrastructure. Sibley County had a great program where they invested in mobile hotspots and laptops for rental for families who couldn't afford them throughout the school year or didn't have Wi-Fi in their homes. So they had hundreds of laptops available for individual families to rent out at 4-week intervals so they could plan either to do work, to collaborate with their education requirements, or even some communities hosted game nights with them. An extension of broadband infrastructure, we talked about that. Support to other local governments. So we found that in some cases, cities or townships needed more assistance for some of their fire departments. Counties helped out with that. Senior center, housing assistance, regional and industry specific relief. There's a great story about three counties coming together to help the paper industry. Itasca, St. Louis County, Kuching County. When we're not in the office, we're not printing as much. And so Minnesota's timber and paper industry were really hurting, and those three counties came together to really try to shore it up through these tough times. Increasing access to water is one of the last stories I'd leave you with, and this just kind of shows the needs throughout Minnesota. I kind of had to step back on this. I had to call the county and ask, you know, what's this all about? But apparently in some areas of the state, access to actually clean water for more a prolonged period of time is a problem. And so we had a couple counties who actually gave out grants and funds to contractors to put in wells for families to have access to clean, fresh water for longer durations of time. So these are some of the examples of the external funding sources. The internal sources are a little less exciting, but really they can be categorized into two buckets, and that is infrastructure improvement and personnel reimbursement. As folks know, counties are really a community epicenter for a countless number of in-person government services, whether it's kind of the minutia of title transfers, marriage certificates, driver's licenses, or more detailed services like court services, correction, probation, or the social safety net services that we provide. So we spent a good amount of money and time updating the infrastructure and technologies that are necessary to carry out these services, still mandated services, remotely and safely. The other part of this, of course, is the personnel reimbursement for extra time, payroll, leave, disability benefits, PPE, for all our county sheriff, public safety, jail, and first responders, as well as local public health, which many counties in the state are responsible for. And while I would love to focus on just the success stories, I do want to talk, as I was asked to by the committee, about some of the hardships and learning lessons, complications that we faced while getting these funds out. And I have four of them. One is the lack of guidance. I think this statement is pretty just jaw-dropping. We had $150 billion in taxpayer funds to state, tribal, local governments, and along with it came a 12-page FAQ from the federal government. $150 billion, that's 1.87 to Minnesota, 841 to cities, townships, and counties, and a 12-page FAQ. So that is, for a risk-averse nature of county governments, that is something that really caused us a lot of consternation. We had a lot of questions that just didn't have answers. Number two is even worse than little guidance is conflicting guidance. And what we saw, and again, this is Treasury Department, this is not the state's issue, but what we saw is that guidance issued in late June or early July either conflicted with things on their question and answer form, or something came out in August unexpectedly that conflicted with something that was previously stated and really had us running around and changing our rules midterm. The third was the audit and kind of the risk of the unknowns. Anyone accepting more than $750,000 of these funds does have to do a federal single audit here, as they should. However, when we talk about the numbers one and two, the lack of guidance and conflicting guidance, it really means that counties acted cautiously. And it, combined with their risk-averse nature, I think it was a double-edged sword. Yes, it really preserved and made sure we listened to the rules, but I think we were a little too cautious and conservative sometimes, and it stemmed a little creativity that we had. A more practical example of this is the business assistance programs. Our applications were very detailed. We were requesting a lot of revenue forms, things like that, and some of the complaints we heard from businesses were they didn't have the forms, or they could prove anecdotally, but they couldn't show the documentation that we required. So that is one of the things that I think was a learning lesson. And then the last thing I want to leave folks with is the timeline. $467 million to counties in really 4 months during our budgeting and levying time frame. And not every county is created equally. You have some counties in Minnesota where the auditor is the county board clerk, the CDA director, and a part-time sheriff. And they were responsible for putting up a business relief program. So I have to say that just on behalf of AMC, it's been incredible to watch folks come together to collaborate and really help each other out to create these programs and do good. And so even with these hardships, I think Minnesotans can stand proud of the quick response, the creativity, the thoughtfulness exhibited by counties, elected board members, and staff. And during a mess of a year, the message is clear, at least in my mind, and that is local government is working, and it will continue to work to assist our neighbors, our residents, our businesses, taxpayers, and those most in need during these tough times. So with that, Madam Chair, I think I would like to kick it out to the three county guests that we have with us today to highlight their own stories. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hilgert. Just to be mindful of time, if testifiers could keep the rest of their comments to about 5 minutes each, and I want to welcome Rock County Commissioner Kyle Oldray, Pine County Commissioner Steve Hallen, and Ramsey County Commissioner Tony Carter to testify. And if you each, before you testify, state your name for the record and then proceed.
Madam Chair, I think I'm first on the list Matt gave us. I'm Kyle Oldry. I'm actually the county administrator for Rock County. I've had the pleasure of being with Rock County since 1993, and this is like no other time. I want to kick off by saying thank you to members for your work in getting the money out to counties. I will briefly talk about how Rock County allocated its dollars, but to understand how we allocated our dollars, I think it'd be helpful to understand who we are. Rock County is a rural county. We border Iowa and South Dakota, and we're about 9,500 residents, so we're a relatively small county. The money that was appropriated to Rock County was just shy of $1.2 million. That's a substantial sum of money to us. Our levy's about $6 million a year, our total budget's about $12 million, and we had $1.2 million. We're very good at taking money and spending it on things we're used to. It's a new experience for us to go out and give money away. We learned a lot through this, and certainly as Matt talked about, we copied Ramsey County's grant application. We wanted to be leaning forward so we could get that money out working as soon as we received it. And to give you an example, we received the money from the state on the 3rd of July. Our first grants went out on the 17th of July. We turned it around in 2 weeks. We started collecting grant applications prior to having the money. We had one county commissioner, Jody Reich, went door to door on Main Street and handed out the applications to the business owners to ensure that they had it. We certainly worked through the normal means, the press and social media, but he physically took them door to door to ensure that those applications were out. We processed and awarded 168 grants, which is mind-boggling to me. Our main street is three blocks long, but we had 168 businesses, for-profit, nonprofits, along with some additional grants to school districts, which totaled together our portion of the money that went out to those entities was 78%. So we put 78% into for-profit and non-for-profit businesses of our allocation. An additional 12% we took in a little bit different direction. We have one ambulance service that services Rock County. So most of our outreach to accidents or health emergencies are through first responders at the local fire departments. So to ensure that they were prepared to go out and do their response, we purchased Lucas devices and VersaFlows. Lucas devices, if you're not familiar, are a mechanical chest compression device for heart attacks. They're about $10,000 a piece. They're fairly expensive. But what it allows is that first responder to place this on the patient without having to be within the 2 or 3 feet, if you will, of doing chest compressions for safety. So the VersaFlows and Lucas devices were just purely a safety item that went out to first responders and again didn't stay local. So 90% of our dollars that we received from the state went outside for those two categories, if you will, for grants and for that. And we had it all out by the end of August. We believed, the county board directed, that speed was of the essence in getting these dollars out and getting them out to the community and trying to work and be to get people back on their feet. So in closing, I know you're short on time. In closing, I just want to tell you how much I I thank you. The residents of Rock County thank you for getting those dollars out and helpful. And now we're working on the business relief dollars as we speak. So thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll certainly stand for questions at the end with everyone else.
Thank you so much, Mr. Oldery. Next, we have Pine County Commissioner Steve Hallen. Want to introduce yourself and proceed?
Thank you. Steve Hallen, Pine County Commissioner. And thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for having us. And thank you so much for allowing us to use electronic devices to communicate with you. It's something that in my working days, we did distance education in the schools, and I managed a co-op that did that for many, many years. And so this is like old home year for me. I was going to say old home week, but it's gone on. But we are so thankful to the geniuses that really came up with the idea of turning this money to counties, because I heard our state representative, Nathan Nelson, say, you guys live with those business owners. You live with the nonprofit people. You know, you understand, and you are able to communicate with them. We had people like our Chamber of Commerce people that like in Rock County, went door to door and helped people understand the program. We're a medium-sized county. We got 30,000 people. We don't have a lot of excess staff. So what we determined the first time we met is we needed some help distributing almost $4 million. So we enlisted the help of the Initiative Foundation from Central Minnesota to help sort through some of the business things. And that went extremely well and helped with the grants. We wanted the grants to be something that even a county commissioner could understand. So you didn't have to hire a law firm to help fill them out. And I think we did fairly well on that. We did distribute about 63% of all of our funds to businesses and nonprofits. The county kept about 24% for public health and our public safety folks. We did much like every other county in our business assistance program. Probably the first time in our lives, maybe the only time, that we would get hugs from business people thanking us. And that should go to you. We should pass those hugs on to all of you folks, because it kept some of those people, gave them hope and has sustained them through times they feel bad in some cases that they had to lay off employees. You know as well as I do, small businesses have terrific employees, and they become almost like family, or in some cases they are family. So their staff had to get downsized, and they feel bad about that. But the program I want to highlight is from Pine Tech and Community College. They came to us with a plan that said, we want to target the underemployed and the unemployed people in our county, and we have a program, and they named it the Work Fast Program. And they targeted some areas in auto, technician, welding, CNA, and computer business computing. Anyway, they auto technician, for instance, is a 200-hour short course. They got people from either unemployed or underemployed areas and got them back into a sustainable job. I had the privilege of going to a couple graduations, and the students that were graduating there couldn't be more proud of their certificate. The CNA graduates, many of them went directly to work with their certificate to a local nursing home who was very short-staffed because of the pandemic. Nine of these students in welding, CNA, and other programs are continuing their education. They found their calling in life, so to speak. And that is very exciting. And we thank you for that. The students thank you. They are very excited and grateful for the opportunity they had. The instructor said they showed up to class, they were on time, they participated, and they're very, very proud of the certificate they received. So again, thank you very much for the opportunity that you gave the counties to just help distribute this money. We appreciate it, and it was very much needed. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hallam. Next up, we have Ramsey County Commissioner Tony Conner. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I am Ramsey County Board Chair Tony Carter, and I am very thankful for the opportunity to be here with you all today. I've been a commissioner since 2005 in Ramsey County. I'm a former president of the Association of Minnesota Counties, as well as a regular participant in their legislative policy committees and a regular participant in our National Association of Counties, NACO, as well. I'm here today to talk about Ramsey County CARES Act dollars and how those dollars have been distributed swiftly to meet the greatest needs of our community. I am thankful to be assisted here today also by our finance director, Alex Kutza, who will be assisting me for questions at the conclusion. She's very familiar with the details of our distribution and spending. First of all, again, thank you for your partnership this past year during a time such as none other I can recall. Since last March, Ramsey County has been actively responding to the needs within our community to address the effects of COVID-19. The county received CARES funding in the amount of $96.027 million directly from the federal government because of our population size. Since that time, the board and county leadership have been focused on investing in the highest need areas within the community. I'm going to be sharing our major areas of spending, but I want you to know that we spent the entire $96 million as the federal government originally intended, and we still have COVID-related needs for 2021 and likely beyond. We expect the federal government will continue to partner with us in helping to address the needs that we are experiencing in our communities. So our major areas of investment within the CARES funding include $26 million for food and financial assistance. And within that category, this includes access to food and basic needs by residents who are impacted by COVID-19. We were focused on direct food delivery to households, including culturally specific or culturally appropriate and prepared meals and non-perishable food boxes. From August to December, there were 376,824 meals delivered to people who were confined to their homes. We assisted 21 organizations to support grocery and basic needs distribution, and we worked with six organizations and school districts to support meals for students and youth. It also includes funding to help people affected by COVID-19 pay for past due rent and mortgage, damage deposits, or to prevent utilities from being disconnected. And finally, it included funding to reimburse landlords who had tenants that could not make their rental payments as a result of COVID-19. Our landlord assistance program provided assistance to 676 landlords, which allowed 1,765 residents to remain stably in their homes. $16.2 million, the next category, provided support for those experiencing homelessness, including providing COVID-19 respite and hotel rooms also to allow residents to physically distance outside of large shelters, as well as to support meals and other related services. In the next category,
$15 million was used for employment and workforce supports, including community career labs, tech packs for COVID-19 impacted residents to close the digital divide, youth programming, and a resiliency fund for nonprofits. 88 community-based organizations received workforce funding to support residents. 2,150 tech packs were provided to the community. 150 were provided directly to the American Indian community, and 750 were distributed to young adults between 18 and 24 through community-based partnerships. And still, we're still finalizing, but about $1.7 million will have been provided to support nonprofits providing workforce, health, and food and well-being support to the community. In another category, $15 million was spent for the Ramsey County Small Business Relief Fund. This funding is being used to help small businesses and self-employed entrepreneurs directly impacted by COVID-19. The program prioritizes businesses owned by Black, Indigenous, Asian, Pacific Islander, Latinx, and all people of color and or women, and businesses with 20 employees or fewer. So as of December 18th, 2020, a total of $12,276,430 has been dispersed to 1,644 businesses. Within that 1,644 processed relief requests to businesses, 1,194 businesses with up to 20 employees were included, and they qualified for up to $10,000 in qualified expenses. 450 self-employed entrepreneurs or sole proprietors or creative businesses received up to $7,500 in qualified expenses. 43% of these were BIPOC-owned businesses, and that does not include the 10% that chose not to identify. 22% of the total funds went to restaurants, bars, tap rooms, delis. About 10% of the funds went to retail establishments. 5% went to wellness, finance, gyms, et cetera. I'm sorry, I said wellness and finance. That's wellness and fitness or gyms. And then 4% of the funds went to daycare. 6% went to personal services establishments like salons, nail care, and barbers. About 10% of the total funds went to health clinics, dental offices, chiropractors, and therapists. 14% went to self-employed entrepreneurs. 8.7% went to creative businesses. We've also spent about $24 million on other COVID-19 related supports, including items such as personal protective equipment, public health and essential services, community engagement and racial equity work, including the Mask for All initiative and an early childhood support program, public safety, direct care, and IT infrastructure. So in closing, I want to thank you again, just reiterating that Ramsey County's invested all of our CARES funds in the highest needs areas. We have no funding that will be returned to the Treasury. We found ways to continue the most urgent responses, such as home-delivered meals and homeless services, but in order to continue the work as the pandemic continues to impact our residents, we will need additional federal funds. I want to thank you again for kicking off your legislative session, paying attention to this very, very important local government work. We need the state and our local partnership to get through this. And of course, we all need the federal government to do more in this area. I look very forward to joining you and making that ask of the federal government. Thank you. And I will also remain for questions along with Alex Kutza, our finance director.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Carter. And thank you all for sharing your stories and your successes and your challenges. Next, we're going to move on to the League of Minnesota Cities. And we have with us Garrett Carlson and Lisa Sova. Looking at time, I would like to try to end this segment at about quarter after. I know that makes you kind of tighten it up. I'm sorry, but I want to make sure we have enough time for questions. So either quarter after, 20 after, between quarter after and 20 after. Mr. Carlson, do you want to kick it off, introduce yourself, and proceed?
Madam Chair, yes, thank you for the opportunity today to discuss city uses of the coronavirus relief funds. My name is Gary Carlson. I work with the League of Minnesota Cities, and joining me today is Lisa Sova, who joined the League of Cities in June from the city of Crosby as our assistant finance director. And we realized right away that with the magnitude of this effort, this distribution of CRF funds, that we needed somebody as a point person. And she has guided more than 600 cities as they've puzzled through the guidance that we've gotten from Treasury on how to use the funds. I also want to thank the legislature last year for working on the bipartisan basis for developing the formula that was ultimately used to distribute the monies. Representative Marquardt and Representative Garofalo from the House side did a wonderful job of working with cities and counties to make sure that that whole distribution system worked. I'd like to also, frankly, thank Mr. Matt Hilgert for all of his work. We worked quite closely with legislators in helping get that formula finalized. You know, I've been working on city issues at the Capitol since 1983, and the CRF fund issue was clearly one of the most unique opportunities and clearly one of the biggest challenges that I think our cities have faced in all the years I've worked around the Capitol. It was an opportunity because the pandemic resulted in vast concerns and uncertainty for cities as the economy slowed so dramatically and as city operations had to be modified to adjust for safety issues. It created challenges because you have to think about this. The original CARES Act only spoke to a couple of broad guidelines on how you can use the monies, and Ms. Schill went through those. They had to be a necessary expenditure related to the public health emergency. They had to be not accounted for in a city budget or a city or county budget, and they had to be costs incurred between March 1st and December 30th. That is all that the CARES Act actually said about the use of the funds. The CARES Act was enacted, signed into law in late March, and the first guidance we received was in April. And that guidance came in the form of an FAQ sheet, as Matt indicated, or Mr. Hilgert indicated, about a 12-page FAQ. But for the committee's reference, that FAQ sheet was updated seven more times, the latest of which was October 19th of this last year. That was less than a month before the end of the city timeframe to use those monies. And that created many, many challenges and much uncertainty among our cities about how they could use the money, whether the rules would change after they had already dedicated the monies. But in the end, the cities were able to use most of the $350 million that was allocated to them. And they were able to use it for many of the types of uses that Mr. Hilgert and the county officials highlighted. I would encourage members to review the MMB report. It does contain lots of great information about the city uses. But what I'd like to do right now, or in just one second, is turn it over to Ms. Silva or Ms. Slova to basically go over some of the city uses. But I'd like to say one more thing. If there is a third federal stimulus that includes monies to cities and counties, I think we've learned some great lessons in the work together with the state of Minnesota, with MMB and other agencies. And I think that if we do have another stimulus package, it'll be much easier for the state of Minnesota to use that money to assist our residents and businesses across the state. So with that, I'll turn it over to Lisa.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. And Ms. Selva, do you want to introduce yourself and proceed?
Madam Chair, members, as Mr. Carlson said, my name is Lisa Silva. I'm the Assistant Director of Finance with the League of Minnesota Cities. And prior to joining the League, I served as the City Administrator and experienced the first 3 months of the pandemic from a city's perspective. I started with the League in June, which aligned perfectly with the CARES Act funding opportunity for cities. Assisting cities with understanding and utilizing coronavirus relief funding has been a significant part of my work. A bit of background, Ms. Schill and Mr. Swanson provided a thorough summary earlier, and I'll just highlight a few of their comments. The Coronavirus Relief Fund was designed to provide ready funding to address unforeseen financial needs and risks created by the COVID-19 public health emergency. the payments from the fund were to be used for necessary expenditures due to COVID-19, costs that were not included in the government's most recently adopted budget as of November 27th of 2020, and costs that were incurred during the period for cities beginning March 1st of 2020 and ending on November 15th of 2020. Fund payments did not need to be the last resort source of funding. However, recipients could not use payments from the fund to cover expenditures for which they received reimbursement from other sources such as FEMA. Local governments were responsible for making determinations as to what expenditures were necessary due to COVID-19. And although a broad range of uses were allowed, revenue replacement was not a permissible use of fund payments. Cities and towns with populations of 200 or more were allocated $75.34 multiplied by the population. Cities were required to certify agreement to comply with federal guidance and state reporting for the use of funds in order to receive this distribution. And of the 657 cities which were eligible, 645 cities received funds, while only 12 cities did not certify. The first distribution went out on July 6th, with the last date to certify of September 15th. The allocation of funds provided great benefit to cities, but it also presented challenges. The timeline for use of funds was tight. Qualified items were in high demand and difficult to obtain. Cities struggled to incur, receive, and pay for qualifying items by the deadline of November 15th. Cities also found it difficult to schedule contractors to complete necessary renovations by the November 15th deadline. The guidance was confusing, vague, and fluid, and cities were also very apprehensive. Many feared misinterpreting the rules and having to pay back CRF. Cities with limited fund balances were especially cautious. Reporting requirements caused some confusion. There was a change in the report due to federal requirements, so the format changed from the first time reports were submitted to the subsequent reporting. There were frustrations with the administrative burden. For example, cities that issued grants now find themselves in a situation where they need to issue 1099s to grant recipients, and for some, this was not foreseen. In addition, CARES Act funds are subject to the single audit requirement, which adds expense to the city. Since the cost of the audit will be incurred after November 15th, the city will be responsible for the cost of the audit. As I stated earlier, the CARES Act funds could not be used for revenue replacement, and the burden of reduced revenue is equally as impactful as additional expenses due to COVID-19. Some examples of areas of reduced revenue experienced by cities includes liquor license fees, loss of rental fees for community centers, park facilities, and meeting rooms, loss of recreational fees due to canceled programs, reduced utility revenue due to delinquency, as well as reduced demand that results from closure of some of the larger users, local sales tax, lodging, and entertainment taxes that are not collected due to closure as well. To the benefit of cities, the funding provided much needed relief by addressing unforeseen expenses related to COVID-19. Many of these are included in the handout that we provided, and in the interest of time, I'll highlight just a few. Modifications to public facilities, such as improvements to the HVAC systems to address air quality and retrofitting offices to allow for social distancing. Under the technology category, tablets for council members to facilitate distance meetings, and laptops to enable employees to work remotely. Public safety was addressed with masks, gloves, and sanitizing supplies, and payroll for health and safety personnel. Grants and loans were high priorities in the area of use of funds. Help with additional expenses due to business interruption was provided. Food distribution was addressed with the program, such as Meals on Wheels and additional refrigeration units for food shelves to safely store increased inventory due to the increase in demand. Support for childcare in the form of increased costs to sanitize in order to protect the staff and the children. And another example that was purchasing individually packaged foods to eliminate transferring germs among the children. An example that was very creative and I think is worthy of mentioning is the City of Duluth. The City of Duluth Police Department implemented a schedule change to protect patrol officers from exposure due to COVID. The schedule change was for all patrol officers to work 5 consecutive days, followed by 15 consecutive days off. The schedule change to the 15 days off in between was made to detect whether an officer exhibited symptoms of COVID and to prevent the virus spread among the police officers. The police department schedule change resulted in a shortage of patrol officers in the city to respond to the public health emergency. And to alleviate the shortage of officers available for patrol to respond to the public health emergency, all of the officers assigned to other police functions were reassigned to the patrol division. The cost of reassigning officers was not accounted for in the most recent budget because it was a substantially different use from the expected use of those funds. Smaller cities utilized funds to continue the work of city government with transparency by integrating technology and modifying council chambers. One city installed plexiglass dividers between their council members. Another city purchased tripod speakers to project sound into their lobby and outdoor area to enable social distancing. Many cities moved to virtual meeting platforms and have commented that they have experienced increased community engagement as a result. In summary, the Coronavirus Relief Fund successfully provided much needed assistance to local governments to aid with COVID-19 relief efforts. By allocating these resources, it was possible for cities to continue to provide service and governance in this time of pandemic. Thank you for your time. This, Madam Chair and Representatives, concludes the presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Sova, and thank you, Mr. Carlson. Members, we have about just under 15 minutes for questions, and I want to thank the testifiers for sticking around for that. So go ahead and use the raise hand function in Zoom if you have any questions. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and not so much questions as comments. I really want to thank Mr. Hilgert and Mr. Carlson and the League and AMC, all these groups, because as they mentioned, the uses for these dollars were pretty broad. And so their guidance, not in only helping develop the legislation, but then implementing it, was really crucial. And it was good that they had close contact, as they always do, with their cities and counties. So I want to thank these local government groups for the work they did in getting those dollars out. And, you know, we had at one time in the legislation a 10% requirement, basically, that the funds go to economic security. That would help people and businesses and so forth impacted by COVID-19. Well, they surpassed that. The counties and cities easily surpassed that. About a quarter of the funding probably or more going out for those areas. So that was great. And I think the last thing I want to mention is that this was a chance for cities and counties and townships that they were kind of left to their own devices to design some sort of relief and how to use these funds, because it wasn't much guidance. But as you heard from the commissioners and Ms. Sova and so forth, the creativity and the, you can tell that these folks know their communities, they wanted to help their communities, and they did that in a very creative way that was much more efficient than probably the state could have done. So I think that bodes well for our cities and counties and townships and local governments that when left to their own devices and they have a task to do, they can more than surpass the expectations, as at least in my mind, they did on this. So I want to thank our local governments and all those involved for the work they did in helping people during this very difficult COVID-19 pandemic.
I'd echo those statements, Chair Marquardt. It is impressive. And when I talk to many of the small business owners in my community, those county and city grants are really what helped them bridge the gap and help them stay afloat. So any other members have questions? Or even statements. Give it a few minutes here. can't tell if it's just because everybody's tired at the end of the day or if you just did such a great job with your presentations. Well, members, I want to thank you all for your time. I want to thank nonpartisan staff for the overview and AMC and LMC for their participation and bringing voices to the table. We will have our meeting next week during our regular committee time on Wednesday, the January 20th, where we're going to have an overview from House Research and Fiscal Staff on our jurisdictions. And then the week after, we might be rolling into a little bit of, I like to call, speed dating, while we'll have the organizations come up and introduce themselves so we can get to know them all. With that, members, the first committee for this session of the Property Tax Division is now adjourned.